Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is certainly not known to everyone, but He is very powerful and influential. Therefore, although the servant of eternal time, which is fearful in force, endlessly chases everyone, ready to swallow him, if one who fears this serpent seeks shelter of the Lord gives him protection from even death, for even death runs away in fear of the Lord. I therefore surrender unto him the great and powerful supreme authority, who is the actual shelter of everyone. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. One who is intelligent understands that there is a great and supreme authority above everything. That great authority appears in different incarnations to save the innocent from disturbances. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4.8, Pare Tranayam Sarunam Vinashaya Chaduskritam. The Lord appears in His various incarnations for two purposes: to annihilate the Duskriti, the sinful, and to protect His devotees. The king of the elephants decided to surrender unto him. This is intelligent. One must know that great supreme personality of Godhead and surrender unto him. The Lord comes personally to instruct as how to be happy, and only fools and rascals do not see by intelligence this supreme authority, the supreme person. In the Sruti Mantra it is said, Vishasmat Vata Parvate Vishodeti Surayaha Vishasmat Agnis Chandras Cha Mrityu Davati Panchamaha. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.8. It is out of fear of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that the wind is blowing, that the sun is distributing heat and light, and that death is chasing everyone. Thus there is a Supreme Controller, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9.10. Maya Jakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharataram. This material manifestation is working so well because of the Supreme Controller. Any intelligent person, therefore, can understand that there is a Supreme Controller. Furthermore, the Supreme Controller himself appears as Lord Krishna, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and as Lord Ramachandra to give us instructions and to show us, by example, how to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet those who are Duskriti, the lowest of men, do not surrender. Namam Duskritina Mudaha. Prabhajante Naradam. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord clearly says, Mrityu Sarva Harashchaham. I am all devouring death. This Mrityu, or death, is the representative who takes everything away from the living entity who has accepted a material body. No one can say, I do not fear death. This is a false proposition. Everyone fears death. However, one who seeks shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be saved from death. One may argue, does the devotee not die? The answer is that a devotee certainly must give up his body, for the body is not his material. The difference is, however, that for one who surrenders to Krishna fully and who is protected by Krishna, the present body is his last. He will not again receive a material body to be subjected to death. This is assured in Bhagavad Gita 4.9. Chaktva deham punarjanma naiti mam iti so Arjuna. A devotee, after giving up his body, does not accept a material body, but returns home back to Godhead. We are always in danger because at any moment death can take place. It is not that only Gajendra, the king of the elephants, was afraid of death. Everyone should fear death because everyone is caught by the crocodile of eternal time and may die at any moment. The best course, therefore, is to seek shelter of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and be saved from the struggle for existence in this material world, in which one repeatedly takes birth and dies. To reach this understanding is the ultimate goal of life. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 8th canto, 2nd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Elephant Gajendra's Crisis. Om Ajanta Mirandasya Gananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svabhadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamsya He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavanishvari Hanusute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare So this is the final verse in this chapter, the Elephant Gajendra's Crisis. So actually every moment of our existence in the material world is actually a crisis. This is the nature of the material world, that we try to make things a livable situation, but at any moment, catastrophe. So we never know from one moment to the next what's going to happen. There's many people gone to the other side, as they say. What they call the other side. People have left this world, but they didn't know they were going to leave at that time. What percentage do you think it would be of those who were leaving realize they were going to leave at that time? Good question, isn't it? But we know, don't we? We make plans, yeah, probably about this age. My parents lived to this age, and maybe a few years extra. I'm a vegetarian. I had a relatively sinful life, and then all of a sudden the grim reaper comes and says, I'm sorry, it's time. And that's it. There's a story of I think we all know this story of the person who was given, he went to an astrologer, and the astrologer looked a little bit disturbed. He says, what's the matter? He says, I don't know how to tell you this, but tomorrow you're going to die. He said, where am I going to die? He says, in the Rim Bombay. He says, you're going to die in Bombay. And so he said, so he was thinking, he was an intelligent person, so he was thinking about this. And so he immediately went to, Thomas Cook. He bought a ticket to Calcutta. And on his way he thought, cracked it. And then just as he got off the plane in Calcutta, there was a person getting on the plane, and it was death personified. He says, oh, you've saved me a journey. I just came to meet you. So we all know this story, but actually this is the situation that we're making plans to avoid the inevitable. And that's what brings distress, isn't it? What does the Bhagavad Gita say? He says, we shouldn't try to enjoy this world. We all know that. Well, do we actually? We do. We still try to enjoy. But we know it in theory. But what's the other one? We shouldn't try to get out of it. which seems a contradiction in terms, but what does it mean, not try to get out of it? What does Bhagavad Gita say? It says that in the 250, 246, I think it is, it says that one should be indifferent, one should rise above the modes, become free from fear, and be situated in the self. This is the goal of life, isn't it? To be situated in the self. This is the way to be safe and happy. What does it say? Prashanta manasam yenam yoginam sukam uttamam upaitya shanta radasham brahma bhuta akalmasam. It says the yogi whose mind is fixed on me attains the highest perfection of transcendental happiness. He's beyond the modes of passion and he realizes quality identity with the Supreme. That's talking about in this lifetime, that we're fixed in ourselves, we're understanding and we're convinced of our real situation. Jivera Swarupai Krishnera Nityadas. And when we're fixed in that conception of life, then we're situated on the platform of eternity. And then everything else becomes secondary. Now, obviously, a devotee learns how to carry on living in the world. But for his own purpose, he should be fixed on that platform. And so everything we do in devotional service is meant to bring us to that understanding. And then we're not, Bhagavad Gita said, we're not disturbed in any situation, like a lamp in a windless place. So many difficulties may be there. And so this human life is actually a practice ground. Every catastrophe that comes is a chance to take shelter or remember and then take shelter of Krishna. And these it's a moment-by-moment decision, isn't it? Krishna consciousness is a moment-by-moment decision. And what's the test of our Krishna consciousness, would you say? If we're ready for death, that might be a little bit difficult for most of us, but nobody's ready for death. Right up to the last minute, one story, are we ready for death? Did I tell this story last time? It was about one lady, I'll tell it again anyway. There was one lady, a devotee from Australia, and she was staying in the ashram next to me. I was staying in the green ashram, just down Prabhu Vishnu Swami's ashram. And I heard that, she was leaving her body, and then I was told by one devotee what the background was. And she was planning that she realized that her disease had become imminent, our death had become imminent, so she decided to go from Vrindavan back to Australia to leave her body. That was her plan. And then she got to the customs, or she got to the airport, and then they saw the state it was in, and they wouldn't let her out of the country. And she had to go back to Vrindavan. And then she stayed in that place. She left her body in Vrindavan. And so Krishna's training, even at the last moment, the story of that book distributor, what they call that book distributor, who left her body. She's wrote her, it's a long time ago. Gauri Mataji, is that right? Yeah. And she was, I forget where I read it, but it was talking about what she was going through at the time. And even though she was next to death, she was still thinking about attraction to the material world, and she was thinking, no, don't go for it. So Krishna's like that, is at the last moment is still purifying, and till that final moment when we're completely detached. And so we make life easy if we start doing that now. We start working on what am I doing now, and how is it connected with the ultimate Swatagati. And if we remember that, not only will we be rightly situated, but actually everything we do will be properly situated as well. Can you imagine if we've got a whole host or a whole yatra or a whole temple of rightly situated devotees? Things will really move, won't they? Very fast. But still, we fear the crocodile of death, but we don't fear it. Is that right? We fear it, but out of illusion, the illusion makes us try to make it a friend. And here's Gajendra, he's actually a devotee, and he's well situated, but what happens when we get opulence? Janmaisvarya Shruta Shribir, Hedamana Manampuram, Niravai Abhidhartam Vai, Twamma Kinchina Gochara. Then we get bewildered by these things. Janma, that's good birth. Aishvarya, plenty of money. Shruta, we become learned. And Shribir, we're very beautiful. For some time anyway. So we hang on to these things. These things are like, he says in the Gita that namno hi yavati shakti papam niharane hare tavat kartam nishaknoti patakam pataki naraha. He says simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord once, one can become freed from material existence. One can be freed from more sins than he's able to commit. But Prabhupada writes in his purport to this Janmaisvarya verse that there's a quality to that chanting. And that quality is not usually there unless we're, what's the word? What's that word? We're materially exhausted. Akinchina gochara. When we're materially exhausted. So what does that mean? That we have nothing? It means internally we understand that there's nothing else to go for. There's nothing else in this world which is of any consequence. I mean, we either surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or we're free. Is that right? We either surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or we're free. We either surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or we surrender to something else. That's the point, isn't it? What, any feedback on what we surrender to? Does everybody get the question? The mind. And what does my mind is the friend or the enemy? And usually, in the beginning of devotional service, it's probably more of an enemy, isn't it? We tend to... the more we can actually remember Krishna and surrender, the more we know what to do to control the mind. The more we don't know, it usually comes from experience, the more the mind's a controller. Very, very subtle. So what else can we surrender to? To bad habits. I was thinking, I say bad habits, they're there. These are something that we're working at. And by applying the philosophy, we can actually overcome those bad habits. It's a matter of our intention, isn't it? What our intention, what our desire is, then Krishna fulfills. So if we still have bad habits, it means that we still want to keep them, isn't it? We may say externally, Prabhu, I wish I could give up this bad habit. I'll go on then, give it up. Prabhupada said that, didn't he? Just give it up. Prabhupada, these regulative principles are so hard to follow. You promised. Rectify. He didn't, you know, it's up to us. We can rectify if we really want to. And if we really want to, Krishna will give us that, what is it? What's the word? Commitment. Not commitment. How what? No, there's another word. When we actually... when we're convinced. Conviction. It's conviction, isn't it? Devotional services. Whatever we do is based on our conviction. If we've got the conviction that this will actually make me happy, we'll definitely do it. If we've got the conviction that it's not, then we don't do it. If we've got the conviction about Krishna consciousness, then we can actually be very, very convinced about devotional service and its practice. The three modes of nature, this is what we surrender to actually. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, We surrender to the Krishna and we become transcendental. Daivihi Ashugunamai Mama Maya Durachaya Mame Vie Prabhajante Mayami Tamtarantate. And what's the verse before that? It's warning us if we don't. Tribir Gunamaya Bhaver Ebe Sava Midam Jagat Mohitam Nabhaganati Naham, what is it? Naham Teshuva Vastitaha. That actually most people are surrendering to the modes of nature, bewildered by the modes of nature. Same as Gajendra here, he's bewildered by the modes of nature. And so why is he thinking like that? He's completely forgotten the plot. Although he's a devotee, he's thinking that he can beat this crocodile. And then it took thousands of years before he started losing his strength. You know, and then he realized, wait a minute, I'm going to lose. And then he surrendered. And so this is the material energy. We gradually lose our strength. He says, when Krishna especially favors somebody, that he takes everything away. And then that Yashyam Ham Anagrinami, that Harishedad Tanamshana, Tato Gyanam Titanchasha, Svajana Dukha Dukitam. Dukha Dukitam. It means he suffers. And then he's got no alternative. His friends and relatives, they all leave him. So Krishna puts us into this situation for our benefit. So we should see every... Gajendra's put into this situation because he's actually a devotee. And he'll be able to remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But higher principle than this is what? What's higher principle than having to suffer? We hear about it regularly. We're doing it, or should be doing it every day. Starts with why. Eh? It means we yukta vairagya. That we learn how to see everything in relationship to Krishna and use it in that way. So Gajendra reached the point that we all have to reach sooner or later, that death's imminent, so now he's surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead after so long. And all the prayers came. He'd forgotten for so long, but he recited eloquent prayers. So what does this say? This says that actually we're not in charge of the situation, we're not in charge of our intelligence. Can you imagine being in the water and, you know, there's a crocodile wrapped around your leg, biting it, and, you know, you're about to leave your body, and you start remembering eloquent prayers? No, Krishna gives that intelligence. So if we want to surrender, then Krishna will give the intelligence. It's all a matter of our conviction and sincere endeavour. So I wrote a few more things here. So Janma Mrityu Jaravadi Dukha Dosana Dasanam. This is in the 13th chapter. This is Gajendra's position. And what's the quality that Gajendra exhibits here? What would you say? What was the quality before he started to pray? Eh? Before he started to pray, or before he became helpless, he was fighting. It was false prestige, weren't it? He thought, I'm a big elephant. I can easily beat this crocodile. But what quality came when he realized he was going to lose? Humility, yeah. And what's humility described as in the Bhagavad Gita? Then we know in the 13th chapter there's a string of verses. Talks about the process of surrendering. Or the process of surrendering means the process of knowledge. When we have knowledge, naturally we know what to do. You see, it starts with this humility. Without humility, we cannot actually surrender. Actually, I had some sheet of paper upstairs, and it had some examples of humility. Would anybody like to get it? Or maybe I have time to read it. On the table, there's two pieces of paper. One of them's called humility. That's for the door and that's for my room. So, what does humility actually mean? We were talking about this in the Brahmachari Ashram last week and the week before. If we were to say, what is humility? How would you encapsulate in just a sentence or a few sentences? Being surrendered. Well, we'll develop humility if we are surrendered eventually. Feeling insignificant. Yeah, that's what one person said, that thinking less about yourself and more about others. Realizing our capacity and then using it in Krishna's service. This is very good. Helpless. Yeah, helplessness brings humility, definitely. When we're helpless, then we've got no option. You think of that one. Appreciating the greatness of God and his parts and parcels. I mean, in other words, seeing the creation for what it is. When we see the creation for what it is, then you've got no object, you've got no option than to be humble. Realise our own position in relation to that. Did you have? Yeah, so it's similar to what you were saying, that, you know, we remember our insignificant position. Anyway, it doesn't look like he's going to come with his paper, so what to do? Oh, is he? Yeah, this is some quotes from people who are not classed as devotees, but they were writers and theologians and philosophers. And one thing they say that we do not see things as they are. We see things as we are. So what does that mean? We see things as we are. This is from the Quran, one of the Hebrew scriptures. Hey? Atmanam manite jagat. Yeah, we see ourselves, we see everything through our own conditioning. We think everybody's like us. So if we see fault in somebody else, then it means for certain that we've got that fault. And so this brings humility. When we're seeing faults, it means we've got a lot of work to do. This is by, beauty in things exists in the mind which contemplates them. That's the same thing. If we see good in others, it means we're starting to actually appreciate the, like you were saying, that we're appreciating Krishna and his creation. Now, this is a bit of a long one. See if anybody can work this one out. If we are wise enough to base our self-esteem not on being right, but on being rational, on being conscious and on having integrity, then we recognize that acknowledgement and correction of an error is not an abyss in which we have fallen, but a height we can take pride in having climbed. Did everybody get that? It means when we, generally, we don't want to make mistakes. We don't want to be exposed. Nobody likes to be exposed. But this exposure is a platform of making progress. If we can be humble in that situation, then we can see where we can go forward. Unless we see where we're at, we can't go forward, can we? Unless things are revealed to us. Trinadapi sanichina, taradapi sahishnana, amanina manadena, kirtaniya sadahari. We'll do one more. In times of change, the learners will inherit the earth, while those who are attached to their old certainties will find themselves beautifully equipped to deal with a world that no longer exists. Hare Krishna. And so Gurdjieff to realize that the world is no longer going to exist for me. And so he surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So today is Diwali. And I just thought I'd read a little bit from Krishna Dharma's Ramayana about when Lord Ramachandra has defeated Ravan and is ready for returning. And he's speaking to Vibhishan. So is that okay? Vibhishan bowed before Lord Ram and repeatedly requested him to stay for a while in Lanka and accept his hospitality. But Ram was anxious to depart. He thought of his mother and of Bharat, how they must long to see him again. His exile was now over. He had promised to return immediately. If he did not return, they would surely be consumed by grief and anxiety. Bharat might even give up his life. Ram said, "You have already fully honoured me with your first-class counsel and advice. You have served me well on the battlefield, and I am deeply indebted to you. But now you must grant me leave. O valiant Rakshasa, my task is accomplished, and I must return quickly to Ayodhya." Vibhishan acceded. He at once invoked the Pushpaka, and it appeared in the sky. Ram gazed with wonder at the glowing golden chariot with its lofty jewelled encrusted mansions and countless golden trellises wreathed with garlands of heavy flowers. After inviting Ram to board the chariot, Vibhishan said, "Is there any final service I can render to you before you leave?" Ram asked the Rakshasa to bestow riches upon the monkeys. Give them abundant gold and jewellery and take them back with them. The king should always reward his army. They should be well cared for and given everything they desire, for they must lay down their lives for his sake. So actually in this movement everybody is laying down their life, aren't they? We could do so many things. And so we should have that same outlook, that it's very difficult to maintain our consciousness of this. I remember when I first started visiting the temple at Chaitanya College, first time there, Vyasa Puja, and all the devotees were reading out the offerings. Like, wow, they're so humble. These are all Mahabhagavats. And I was convinced, and I was feeling really blissful. But after we've been there for a while, then it starts to change, doesn't it? Then what these poets were saying, then we start to see them through our own conditioning instead of through intelligence. And then we put our own conditioning on them and we see differently. So yeah, we should... So it's Vaishnava etiquette that we have to practice. Vaishnava etiquette is reminding us of the reality. By proper Vaishnava etiquette, we remain at least practicing on the platform of humility, even though internally it may not be there. It's so important. So just as Ram was about to depart, Sugriva approached him. "O Ram, pray take the monkeys with you," he begged. "We all desire to see you installed as the emperor. After that we will return to our own lands." Ram smiled and agreed. He invited all the monkeys to mount the celestial chariot, which was like a golden city. Looking at Vibhishan, he added, "You too should accompany me. O noble one, with all your kinsfolk and friends, please mount this chariot and come to Ayodhya." Once everybody was on board, the Pushpaka rose high in the air. It flew gracefully with an image of a great swan at its front, seemingly to draw it along. As it flew, Ram pointed out to Sita the sights below. He showed her the battlefield, telling her how all the principal Rakshasas had been slain. While they crossed the sea, he explained how Hanuman had leaped to Lanka. As the chariot reached Kishkinda, Ram had it stop, and he told Sugriva, "Quickly descend and fetch your wives and kinsfolk, O monkey. They too shall be brought to Iogia. With all the monkeys back aboard the chariot continued. Soon they passed over the forest where Ram had spent his early exile. When they reached Bharadvaja's hermitage, Ram desired to meet with the rishi. He stopped the chariot and went down to see the sage, bowing low before him. Bharadvaja offered his blessings and informed Ram that Bharat was anxious to see him. The sage knew of everything in Ayodhya, and from his disciples, who visited the city frequently, he told Ram that everyone was expecting his return at any moment. Ram replied, "Please exert your power and make all the trees surrounding Ayodhya fill with heavenly fruit. All those who will travel to the city to witness my coronation should be amply fed." At once Bharadvaj meditated, and by his mystic power all the trees for 20 miles around Ayodhya became heavy with fruits. The sage said to Ram, "You should enter Ayodhya tomorrow after sending ahead a messenger." That's a good example of Yukta Vairagya. Ram agreed and turned to Hanuman. He asked the monkey to proceed ahead to the city to inform Bharat that he would soon arrive. On the way, the monkey should stop at Sugriva. On the way, the monkey should stop at Sugriva and inform Guha of his news. Ram then said to Hanuman, "Closely observe Bharat's features when you tell him that I am returning. I wish to know his reaction. A kingdom rich in lands and wealth could surely attract anyone's mind. If he has developed an attachment for the kingdom, then I shall let him continue to rule as emperor." This is a good point, isn't it? Very instructive to us that, you know, we have to be very careful about material acquisitions and attachments. He's saying that even his own brother, after 14 years, he may have developed attachment for wanting to run the kingdom. And so look how humble, we were talking about humility, look how humble Ram is. He's saying, if you see on his face that he's actually attached, then we'll leave it. I won't go there, let him rule. And so, we'll carry on. Hanuman left at once. He bounded swiftly through the forest lands and soon reached Guha's abode, telling him the happy news. The Nishida king was overjoyed and he immediately set about preparing to leave Ayodhya. Without delay, Hanuman continued on to Ayodhya and he arrived early the following morning. At a distance of 2 miles from the city, he found Bharat's dwelling. There he saw the prince clad in black deerskins, emaciated from fasting, his hair matted. He sat by his wooden hut and alone and shone with ascetic glory, and he was surrounded by his ministers and priests dressed in similar ascetic clothing. Hanuman approached Bharat and found him continuously repeating Ram's name. The monkey at once lay flat on the ground offering his obeisances. Then with folded palms he stood before the prince and said, "Having completed his exile, the slain Ravan, Ram will soon arrive accompanied by Sita and Lakshman. He has asked after you, after your welfare, and he longs to be reunited with you." Bharat was overwhelmed with joy and sank to the ground in a faint. After regaining consciousness, he stood up and embraced Hanuman. The prince shed tears of happiness and he spoke in an exuberant voice, "O monkey, I do not know if you are God or a rishi or what, but you have told me the most wonderful news. I shall give you 100,000 cows and many beautiful maidens adorned with gold and jewels." Bharat asked Hanuman to tell him in full what had happened and happened to Ram since his departure, and the monkey recounted the tale. Bharat was delighted. He told Shatrughna to go into the city and spread news of Ram's impending return. Bharat ordered that the city be fully decorated with pennants and garlands, and everyone should come out to greet him. Hanuman could easily understand Bharat's heart. Ram should have no doubt about his brother. His devotion for Ram was obviously no less than the devotion Hanuman himself had. The monkey shed tears of joy as he witnessed Bharat's display of love for Ram. So this is the feelings of a one devotee for another, isn't it? That one devotee is happy to see somebody else in devotional service, making progress. I see Prabhupada wrote in one particular purport, I can't remember, but he was saying how we may even feel envy for another devotee sometimes. He says, but when we see that devotee in some difficulty, then we actually, the heart melts. He said, this is a sign of a devotee. Our past conditioning may sometimes bring that envy. But when we see that devotee may be struggling, then we feel we want to help. So this is the way Prabhupada explained. It's coming up to 9 o'clock now, and there is a few more, two more pages. Should we stop there, do you think? What do you think? Okay, we'll read to the end. By the end of the day, the whole region of Nandigram was completely crowded with people, all hoping for a glimpse of Ram. Bharat stood gazing to the south. He felt anxious. Had his monkeys been telling the truth? Was Ram really about to return? When would he arrive? He questioned Hanuman again and again, and the monkey repeatedly reassured him. Suddenly, Bharat saw in the distance a shining Pushpaka. Hanuman then shouted, pointing out to Bharat. Here comes the highly glorious Ram, he cried. The shout was echoed by the crowd of citizens, and great clamour arose. They looked with amazement at the celestial vehicle carrying Ram and Sita, which had appeared above the horizon like a sun, like the sun and moon joined together. Bharat fell to the ground like a rod, offering his prostrate obeisances, with his arms outstretched towards the chariot. The Pushpaka descended to the earth, and Ram dismounted along with Lakshman and Sita. Bharat ran over to them with Shatrughna, and the four brothers embraced each other for a long time. All the principal monkeys headed by Sugriva, Angad and Hanuman assumed human forms and disembarked from the chariot. Along with Vibhishan, they were greeted warmly by Bharat, who embraced them all. Bharat said to Sugriva, you are like the fifth brother to all of us, O Monkey King. Ram saw Kaushalya nearby, and he broke free from the crowd of people who were pressing around him. Quickly approaching his mother, he fell before her and clasped her feet. She was pale and emaciated through grief and separation from her son. Next to her was Sumitra, who appeared in a similar condition. Ram also bowed before her and touched her feet with reverence. As he met Ram, the faces of both of those ladies looked like celestial lotuses in full blossom. Ram greeted Kekayi and the other royal ladies who had come there. He offered his obeisances to Vasishtha and to the Brahmins, who uttered auspicious hymns from the Vedas. Ram then bowed at the feet of his father-in-law, Janak, who shed tears of joy to see him return safe with Sita. As he stood up and looked around, Ram smiled at the citizens, bringing joy to their hearts. Bharat brought Ram's sandals, which had been kept upon Ayodhya's throne. He placed them before Ram and said, here is the entire kingdom held in trust by me on your behalf. Now I render it back to you, O Ram. My birth has borne fruit today, and my deepest desire is fulfilled, for I see you returned as the king of Ayodhya. Bharat told Ram that everything in the kingdom, its exchequer, storehouse, army, crops, had increased tenfold while he was away. All this is due to your influence alone, O Ram, for I rule the kingdom thinking only of your example. Ram embraced Bharat again and again, and the two brothers shed tears of joy. Seeing the display of affection between them, the monkeys and Vibhishan also wept. Ram then looked up at the Pushpaka and said, O Pushpaka, you may now return to your master Kuvera. I thank you for your service. The heavenly chariot then rose in the sky and disappeared. When everyone was seated, Bharat addressed Ram, please assume the rulership of this world. Although I have officiated in your absence, I can no more rule in your presence than a candle can give light in the presence of the sun. Let the world see you shining with dazzling splendour after being consecrated upon the throne of Ayodhya. We all long only for this, O Raghava. Sri Ramachandra ki jai. Bhagavan Ramachandra.